Okay, so today is February 5th, 2014, and we're going to do 394 to 396, Bezrat Hashem and the rest of you students. Okay, so the first one is the precept of the Levites' service at the sanctuary. So this is the mitzvah, that there is a special class of people whose job it is to serve in the sanctuary all together, and what their job is. And it's interesting to think about the singing and how the singing adds to the service and adds to the kavana. And I don't know, has everybody in this room experienced a chazan? Have you?
A chazan. I've seen the word.
I'm just saying, like, is that something that you've, like, listened to the cantor?
Well, yeah, I mean,
Davin and Shul's, where you had that? Yeah. Or choirs? Have you ever heard that?
Well, at the Temple of Manuel, we have that.
Yeah, so it's interesting because
they have a cantor.
Yeah,
they have several.
Regina High.
Yeah, Regina High. She's
right, so the singing is supposed to take you. It's supposed to not be a show.
No. Right.
So,
yes.
It's a hard thing. It's supposed to not be a show.
Ellie's writing this down. She definitely is writing this down. Not a show.
It's the role of the singing.
That's not the case.
Well, sometimes. Sometimes.
Right. So it gets out of hand. Things get out of hand. A lot. In different places, in different ways.
But like Kol Nidre, though, that takes me away. Even though it seems like a show, it still takes me away.
It's supposed to. So the idea is that the singing should bring you to a place of connection with the divine, should enhance you, should carry you. So we learn in Mitzvah 96 all about the kavod of the Beit HaMikdash, all about the environment that it's supposed to be, honoring it, the sanctuary. So, and it was interesting in Mexico to see the different places. So the Sephardic synagogue is just called the Sefa, short for Sephardic. The Sefa is the Turkish synagogue, and it's gorgeous, just gorgeous, huge and stunningly gorgeous. And it currently does not have an observant congregation. So you walk into a magnificent synagogue, but then you see people dressed in basically kind of street clothes, or just how we're dressing right now.
I was going to say.
Yeah, so people, and or a little fancier, but the fancier is more disco fancy than synagogue. So like tight pants and sequin t-shirts, you know, like it's dressed up for them, but it's not, but and a lot of women wearing pants. Yeah, and the machitz is very low. So you don't walk in and feel a sense of decorum. So the decor makes a big difference. So that
from our perspective, but on the other hand, if they're dressed up, I mean, I think that that's an example of possibly putting our
cultural bias
on there. Because if you go to Shul in Israel, you see people, even at very observant congregations.
I would say that's definitely true. So do you need to wear a suit, or are you a kibbutznik?
Or,
and a tie, or are you a kibbutznik?
A tie in Berkeley?
Right, and wearing your white shirt and your khakis because they're long, or they're your Shabbos shorts.
Even with your sandals.
With your sandals is fine. That's not what I'm saying. Here there was less decorum because it is more of a chat scene.
I see. Okay.
On Friday nights there.
Which
it's
a social event more than
much more. The mechitz is very low. There's a lot of kissing going on because, you know, it's Sephardim, they kiss every time they greet somebody, but there's a lot of that and kids running around and the women really not davening and the men kind of listening, and there was more of a chazanish show. So the next day, the person that was taking me to that synagogue said, let's go to the other one for Shacharit. But she told me, I can't really, she's a Baal Tshuva, she said, I can't really daven in the other synagogue. I want to go to the one where I can daven. So it's much smaller, still pretty, but a very small, kind of like a chapel-y kind of a place. Everybody's dressed the world from standard. Yeah, everybody's wearing suits. All the women are wearing, maybe the skirts are a little tight here and there, but whatever. Everybody's wearing like shul clothes. And it was really different. And everybody paid attention. You know, everybody wasn't chatting with each other. Nobody had to silence their cell phone. And, right. You know, and it does make a difference to have that.
Oh, totally. Even in congregations here, I've been where people spend full time chatting, and I find it very distracting.
Very distracting.
I don't like it.
Yeah. And I thought about when I was in that smaller shul, the mitzvah that we learned about, where, and I thought about your face of sadness, when we said a kohen with a blemish can't serve. Mm-hmm. I thought, right, like, look, just look at the difference in just what the dress and the decorum makes in terms of your ability to daven and connect. And if you would see,
I went to shul like 2 weeks ago, accidentally in pants for the first time in my life in Berkeley. Uh-huh.
You hadn't brought a skirt.
I totally forgot that I was going to be there for Shabbos.
when I was packing in a hurry, a lot of stuff was going on, and my sister's about this big, mm-hmm. so I could put a skirt in one leg. Right. But it's Berkeley. Nobody, mm-hmm. I mean,
nobody
there were
you.
A few, not very many, but there were, and I had nice pants and nice, but I, it was interesting. I got over it. Not that I want to do it again.
Right. No, I hear. So anyway, so the Chazon Rites, not supposed to be a show, but it is supposed to bring you to a place. So I had that experience once, because most of the synagogues I've gone to where they've had a Chazon, it has been a show. And even when it was slightly a show, but one time, Shabbos Mevarchim Chodesh, I was in Brooklyn. So every month when they bless the new month, that's they usually say the blessing of the month, and they usually say it a little fancier. So in Brooklyn, there's a shul that everybody likes to go to for this. So I was there from the beginning, and I saw the place filled up as it got close to this blessing. The place was packed, and there's a chazan and a choir. And it was sublime. It really was. I mean, they spent 20 minutes on a 2-minute bracha. It was gorgeous. All the voices just, like, brought you to a place of really, like, of transcendence. So that's what the Levim are supposed to do, is with their voices assist you in elevating. They're there to help you connect. They're there also the Kohen, which is a subset of the Levim, are there to teach. But the Levim are also there to teach. The Levite tribe is there to facilitate the rest of the Israelites' connection to Hashem. So let's just read. The root purpose here is to the glory of the divine king and the place that there should be a certain people. So we didn't do this one last time.
No, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, but you...
It was very similar to
well,
the scripture, I referenced it.
You referenced it.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
we were talking about the Kohanim.
Yeah,
you just referenced
okay, good,
this
okay,
section.
Good. Okay, good. Right. That they should... They're supposed to be a group that's not... Right, we did read this.
Just this one.
Yeah, thanks.
Because I had it underlined.
Good. Okay. So they're supposed to have... We appoint the people to take care of the sanctuary, and the work of the place should be done by them, and they shouldn't be switching off all the
right.
time. You're supposed
that
to have that special
group. Servants.
Right. Okay, so the Levites have their duty. It's interesting here that second paragraph in 143, a Levite in grief is permitted to serve and chant. So what does that mean, a Levite in grief? Levi ha onen mutar la avod v'lesharer.
So is the onen between the death
uh-huh.
and the funeral, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the onen.
You're sitting Shiva the whole time.
No,
you don't
before
Shiva.
Before
Shiva.
At the time of the death, but not before the funeral.
Right. Oh. Onen specifically refers to before your what they call an avel. An avel is somebody who's in mourning, right? So that begins from the burial.
Oh.
But before the burial is a special time called aninut, an onen. A person's called an onen. The period's called aninut. And that is a period of mourning that's intensified where you don't do any positive mitzvahs. So if you're eating, you don't make a bracha. You're not allowed to learn Torah. You're not allowed to. You're not allowed to put on tefillin. You're not allowed to go daven with a minion. You're not allowed to, or by yourself even.
So you
Shema,
don't
you don't say Shema. You don't do anything.
Really?
Yep. You just sit
you don't
there.
Even say Shema.
Yep. No mitzvahs. So it's very weird. When I was in Onan and we ate lunch
to
like
to
pick up a sandwich and just
not.
Eat it, like to not make it like, and you can't bench.
What would be the
so you can't do
anything. Of that is it's almost like
because it's just
upset
probably to set everything aside. Everything is different.
Yeah, it's two main reasons. Maybe it's that you're upset with Hashem. That's an interesting thought. It's that you're so distracted you couldn't possibly have kavana
for
any of this. No. So there's no point.
You're
right, so you're exempted, so you don't even have to try to have kavana during that time. And it's also out of respect for the one who died. They're not buried yet, so there's still a connection to you. And they could be jealous seeing you do mitzvahs.
When they can't
it's
anymore.
When they can't anymore.
Oh.
Yeah. So should you be doing mitzvahs, like, in their presence?
Because their soul
like,
hasn't gone anywhere yet?
Right. It's still hovering a little, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so there's all these different things about the stages, where how it disconnects.
How it disconnects.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. I thought it immediately disconnected.
Mm-mm. No, so we know, like, from doing a tahara, when you wash the body to prepare for death, and you have to apologize to the soul for embarrassing the body afterwards. So there's a special apology that said after the whole process is done, even though the whole process is done respectfully, and nobody talks at all during it except for specific,
that soul
please pass
still
me that. Because the soul is in the room. you mean, it's still connected to the body. It's not in the body.
Right. But
it's still
there.
So you have to apologize then. And then, and you're also not supposed to do anything in a cemetery. You're not supposed to eat in a cemetery. Because I think that's also making brachas and doing things that they can't do. We do daven. I mean, you say Kaddish and you say Tehillim and stuff like that in the cemetery. But you're not supposed to be frivolous in their presence that, you know, and show off what you get to do still. Because since your body and soul are still together. So we're careful about that. But in this, the soul does hover around the body. And somehow, whatever this, and who knows how souls work.
Yeah.
Really. But there is a connection to where the people are too, and to their house. So that's why you're supposed to sit Shiva in the house of the deceased, because their soul is connected to that house too, and it separates out more at the end of Shiva. So it takes a whole year for it to really disconnect, and it could even take more. But in general, there's a disconnection at death, another one at burial, another one at the end of Shiva, another one at the end of Shloshim, another one at the end of the year. So... that's like
the hierarchy.
Yeah, that's like chunks of disconnection. Anyway, so here's interesting. See, a Levite who's an Onain is permitted to serve and chant.
Which is
how could that be?
Well, but then I mean, just skipping ahead only because I read it, which I hardly ever do.
Good.
I'm sorry.
That's why I said it's great. You'll help today.
But on the next page at the 145 at the top, it also says that they're not disqualified by years or by disfiguring blemishes. The only thing that disqualifies them from participating in the singing is if their voice is bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask about that.
So
it's
interesting. So I mean, to me, that's very different. We were just talking about the moon.
All right. Well, so the living.
My friend Hillary says the nuns took her choir robe away from her.
No, but I'm just saying it's. So I think that reinforces the fact that it's merely the sound.
Yeah.
It's not
that.
That
right.
It's not the look. It's not. You know.
Right. So it's interesting to see that he can do this. Let's just read the Torah. Levite and Greek was permitted to serve and chant. There would never be fewer than 12 Levi'im, 12 Levites standing on the platform to utter song over an offering. And more could be added without limit. So 12 is the minimum. So there should be a choir effect. And that's a lot, 12.
Right.
The song that the Levites would utter was by mouth. For principally, a song is by mouth, meaning as opposed to instruments. But others would be standing there who played on musical instruments. Some were Levites and some were Israelites of distinguished lineage who were acceptable to intermarry with the Kohanim. For none might ever go up on the platform but a person of distinguished descent. That would be one of the things I would have looked up. But I didn't.
But distinguished descent, right?
Yeah, the paragraph is based on a Mishnah Torah.
Oh, so the Kohanim can marry outside and bring someone in to their group?
Outside meaning Jews. No, yes.
No, not outside of the out of Jews, but out like
non-Kohanim
can marry.
Women can marry a Kohanim.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is such a thing, though. I mean, there are Kohanim who would prefer to marry a Bat Kohen. So there are Kohen Bat Kohen marriages, but you can marry a non-Bat Kohen. You don't have to marry a Bat Kohen. You can marry a Bat Levi, you could marry a... And you can marry... So that's what's saying. I wonder what the limitation is. I'm marrying a regular Jew.
Yeah.
What does that mean? So you have to have distinguished descent. Let's see. There were never fewer than 9 lutes, and more might be added without limit. Of cymbals, though, there is but 1 set, and that's because they make a lot of noise. Did I hear that here? I think I
Yeah, cymbals is loud.
Yeah, cymbals are very loud, so you don't want to have too much. I went when I heard Yitzhak Perlman play with the Colorado Symphony Orchestra. So we were in the nosebleed seats, but that meant I got to look down and see everything. So it was fascinating just to look at all the instruments so close and see. Actually, the person who plays the cymbals, it's one person, but he has 3 or 4 sets.
Mm-hmm. They sound different.
Yeah.
Smaller ones, bigger ones.
Isn't it? But it's for one.
Right, one cling.
So you need to know which set to use for the one cling.
Yes,
it's amazing to think about, like how subtle that variation.
To him,
must
it all sounds very different.
Yeah,
he's a connoisseur of cymbals.
Right, I think that's right.
And they have the one thing, and then they have a silencer too,
right.
So you can set it down so they stop vibrating in
right.
silence.
Yeah.
So you can keep the vibration going as long as you want. It was fascinating to watch that.
Cymbals are very interesting.
Yeah. So, okay, so one set of cymbals.
Imagine
agitating.
Telling your parents, no, I don't want to go to medical school. I'm going to Juilliard to play cymbals.
Right.
Yeah,
percussion. Let's say
that my daughter is a
drummer. Probably you do drums. Probably you do drums and all kinds of things. If you do cymbals, you probably do all kinds.
Right, yeah, I think so. I think you do all the triangle too, yeah. Probably.
Xylophone. I can even play the triangle, I think.
All right.
I did in kindergarten.
Let's see.
You needed to know.
If there were many, the other musical instruments that were there would not be heard, and certainly not the chant of the mouth. So you can't have the instruments overpower the mouth. The song of the mouth is what's the ikar here, the main thing. As for the flutes on which they played, theirs was a reed flute because its sound is sweet. On 12 days of the year, the flute would play before the altar, and it could thrust aside the Sabbath. So they played musical instruments in the temple.
On
the Sabbath. Not outside the temple, even then.
But in the temple,
on the Sabbath. Yeah, they played musical instruments.
I wish we could hear the tunes, the tunes, the melodies.
Yeah. Right. But isn't that interesting, because if it was permissible to play musical instruments in the temple on the Sabbath, it would seem logical that if it's permissible to do it in the temple, why would it not be permissible outside the temple?
Right, so things work differently in and out of the temple, and they even count time differently, but so here's a few different reasons why not. One is, I believe, and I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure that the reason that we don't play musical instruments on Shabbos is because they might break, and we might fix them so we could keep playing them. So you wouldn't do that in the temple, because your heightened sense of kedusha and awareness, if it would break, you'd set it down right away and just take another one or something, or whatever you're doing. But you wouldn't come to fix it. Like, that's why we don't ride bikes on Shabbos.
But scooters are okay.
Right, because if the chain comes off, you can't put it back on. Like, that's a common thing to happen on a bike. Maybe not so much anymore. You ride, I haven't ridden.
It can happen.
Since you were in high school.
Which was a very long time ago.
Maybe college, but...
yeah, probably.
Anyway, I haven't ridden the bike in a long time, but the chains come off. I seem to remember that from back in the day. So if they do, you can't put it back on Shabbos.
Because that's work.
Right, you can't fix it. So for that reason, we don't... Same thing for riding an animal. We don't ride horses on Shabbos because we might come to break off a switch from a tree to hit the animal. So that's harvesting from a tree. You can't do that. Right, so there are certain things we don't do. We don't do business on the Sabbath because we might write down the math. You know, like how much they're giving me a $20 bill and it's $14.92. What's the change, right? Or that I have to remember to rebuy, that pair of shoes that I just sold. So we don't do business to protect us from writing. So I'm pretty sure that's why we don't play them outside the sanctuaries, because inside there is that heightened sense of...
So the playing isn't the problem, it's the repairing that's the problem.
Right. So there's that. So, but now there's the additional thing of some people in Jerusalem don't play musical instruments for a celebration. I don't know if there's any who don't at all. But certainly for weddings.
For a Simcha, they wouldn't play?
They only play drums inside Jerusalem. There's a large group that only do drums inside Jerusalem. Outside, so many people get married just outside the borders of Jerusalem so they can have a whole band. But inside, they'll only do drums.
Because
the temple is destroyed and
we
don't have full celebration.
Frivolity.
Right. Full celebration with either.
Okay.
And here's also interesting, a Levite would not enter to serve until he'd been taught for 5 years.
Yeah.
A five-year apprenticeship, as the sages of blessed memory inferred from Scripture, because they start at one age and they start to work at another. I think they start at 25 and they can't work until 30. Is that?
They have to be an adult. He doesn't say how old exactly.
Right. And if their voice is bad, they're out, because the whole point is the voices should be good.
And what if you never had a good voice to start out with? This talks about being out if your voice is deteriorating with age.
Yeah, you don't get it if you have a bad voice.
So if you start out with...
You have to do other Levitical jobs like sorting wood and stuff like that.
And locking the doors.
Yeah, make sure the wood's not wormy. Right, we don't want...
He's not disqualified from guarding.
Yeah, he can do all the other things.
Right.
Just can't sing.
But the singing you have to have a nice voice for. Right. And you don't want your choir robes taken away. My mother was tried to sing in the choir when she was a little girl, and they wanted her to be able to be there, but they just told her to
mouth the words.
Not actually sing. Well,
my friend Hillary, who said that the nuns first told her to mouth the words, and then they took her robe away.
Yeah. And they're like, no, you're mouthing too loud. Yeah.
She says.
Sad. Okay. 395, the precept of the first tithe for the Levites. That the Israelites were commanded to give one part in 10 of the grain of the land to the Levites, for it is stated, for the tithe of the Israelites, which they set apart as a gift to the Lord, I have given to the Levites. And it is stated in Sedrat Bechukotai, and the tithe of the land is the Lord's. This is what is called the first tithe. Okay, so the Levites are the servants of the nation, and that includes the Kohanim. But the group of Levites are the servants, and so they're not supposed to be out trying to farm the land and make a living. Everybody else should support them. Now, it's interesting. There's a mathematical question. I think that's in here, too. Why shouldn't they just get a 12th? Everybody should get them a 12th. You know, why do they get a whole 10th?
One tribe.
Right.
Right.
One of the 12 tribes.
Oh, right. Wow. So they should get a 12th. But they get a 10th because they're given that little bit extra. Yeah, they're special. Mm-hmm. I imagine also, and I would have liked to just play with the math, if everybody's giving, so you have 11 tribes giving a 10th.
Is that a 12th?
Does that equal a 12th of the total if the Levites...
You know this
right.
stuff.
Uh-huh. Right,
bring out your
Levites,
phone and figure it out.
Right, if the Levites, because they're not contributing to this, although they do have to contribute to this, as we'll see, but in general, if they aren't raising, if they're not part of the
calculation,
then does that equal out closer to a 12th?
11/12ths.
1/10 of an 11.
1/10 of 11/12ths.
Right.
11 divided by 12 divided by 10.
It's good you know how to set up the equation because I missed that day.
Okay.
It might have been more than one day.
Pretty good numbers.
I actually did well in math, but I only took a couple of years in high school, and that was it.
Yeah,
okay.
It is.
Huh?
It is, because 121, that's one part. Yeah. It would be.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. So it is one.
It's 1/12
of the total.
Of the total.
Uh-huh. Interesting, because that's what I was wondering.
I'm lost. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, there's 12 tribes, but only 11 growing.
Mm-hmm.
So 11...
So 11
1/10 times, you know, the 11/12ths, and then you just change the common denominator to 120, and then you have 120 over 120th, which is one part. That makes sense to me.
Okay.
Because there's only 11 tribes growing, and each of the 11 tribes give a 10th. Is that a 12th?
I think it's a whole.
Well, you still consider 11 tribes as to be one. You know, it's not the...
Now, if you make the 11 tribes into the one... If you make that 11 tribes
into a whole,
they separate out their 10%.
Right.
And that's... 100. That's let's see. Okay,
whatever.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's very close this
right.
week.
So they get a little extra. Mm-hmm. Either they get a little extra, or they get that fair amount. Mm-hmm. But they are fed by the rest of the Jews.
Mm.
So, and it applies to them too. Is that this one or the next?
Yeah,
one?
No, that's this one.
That
too.
Is this one, right? Yeah. Yeah. So even if they grow it, they have to do it too. Now they get to keep it, but they have to separate it. So remember the word tevel and demai that we talked about a long time ago. I'll just redefine it for you. I should have written on the sheet. Tevel is where you know for sure nothing has been separated from the produce. And demai is when you're not sure. Tevel is not, nobody's allowed to eat tevel. And you can't eat demai either. The only question, the nafgamina, here's another word that you need to know. The nafgamina, which is an Aramaic word, nafgamina, means the difference, the halachic difference between the two. So the difference between tevel and demai, in both cases you can't eat it. So there's no nafgamina there. It's the same, right? The nafgamina is, in both cases, you have to separate. For tevel, you make a bracha. For demai, you don't. Because for demai, you're not sure if you did or not. So you can't make a bracha because of the rule of suffik bracha lakula. If you're not sure if you need to make a bracha or not, you don't. Right, so for demai you don't, and for tevel you do make the bracha. That's the nafgamina between the two. So, but nobody's allowed to eat either one, including Leviim, for to whom the separated part belongs. Right, but still a Levi has to separate it, and then they get to keep it, and they can share it. It has no kedusha, as opposed to some other things. Truma that goes to the Kohen has kedusha and can only be eaten by Kohanim who are tahor. A Levi can eat his ma'aser and share it with anyone. They don't have to be tahor, they can even be tamei, and they can share it with their friends and neighbors who are Yisraelim. Invite anybody over to eat from that. So the Kohanim, and I wonder what difference that makes socially, if you think about it. I mean, kashrut makes a difference to us socially. If we have to tell everybody, no, I keep kosher, I can't eat that, or I can't eat there with you. So that certainly segregates us. But what about for the Levite? So the Levite can share his food with anyone, and can eat, and Levi and Cohen can eat in anybody's house, but they can't invite everybody to their house. So Levi
can't reciprocate.
Can, but Cohen, well, Cohen can, but can't share
can't
the
share that food.
Yeah, that special food. So they would have to make a meal that's specifically made of foods that non-Kohanim can eat. Yeah.
Yeah, so you have to keep all the food separate in your...
Yeah, you have to really pay attention. I mean, just imagine the consciousness that it requires
to separate
of the
everything.
Kohen wife to think about everything that's in the kitchen. I wonder how they labeled it. You know, this has Kedusha, this doesn't have Kedusha, this you can take for a snack.
What color is it?
Right. Kadosh.
I know yellow, I know blue, and I know red.
Right.
That's the only colors I have in my house.
Right, so... you probably have to have special stickers for the kosher.
Probably so,
It's okay, kosher notions.
Some people use green for parv. That's even
confusing. I use green for parv,
I use yellow.
Let's see. Okay, so that's basically this tithe. Now, we know that there's a whole schedule of tithes when you take them. So I think it's first, second, fourth, and fifth you take Ma'aser Sheni. And... third and sixth, you take Ma'aser Ani. So those are two separate kinds of tithes. It's not actually this one. This is just the first tithe, Ma'aser Rishon, but there's a Ma'aser Sheni, which depends on the years in the Shemitah cycle.
Oh, that's that cycle where you let everything rest.
Right, every 7 years, right? Mm-hmm. So you count 1 through 7 years. Of course, on the seventh year, you don't take because you're letting everything rest. Mm-hmm. So you have really 6 years that you would be separating these tithes. So every year, you separate the first one, and first, second, fourth, and fifth, you separate Ma'aser Sheni, which also goes to the Levi, and third and sixth, you separate Ma'aser Ani. I don't wonder why that is, which is a tithe for poor people.
So Ma'aser Sheni would be what?
That's the second one.
The second what?
It's the second Ma'aser.
So the first tenth, so then you take a tenth, and then you take a second tenth. First tenth?
No, the first tenth always goes to the Levites.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then, on certain years, you also give a second tenth.
Every year you give a second tenth. Mm-hmm. The question is, to whom does it go? So the first one is a tenth.
A tenth, and
the
that
second
goes
one you
to
have 90% left, so you take a tenth of that. So that's really
9%.
We talked about that,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have that, and then
who does that go to?
And that goes to every other year to Levi. Well, twice, 4 times in 6 years it goes to Levi, and twice in 6 years it goes to the poor person. Or it's opposite. I hope that's not the case. I hope I'm saying
it's
the right
very
thing.
Confusing.
It is confusing.
We talked about that once.
It goes back
and
forth. I made a chart once.
Yes, we did talk about that once.
So there's that. And then from the Levi, from his Ma'aser, Rishon.
Right. He separates
out a tenth.
To give to the Kohen.
To give to the Kohen. That's Truma.
Okay.
And where's that next one? I think that's part of the next one.
It talked about it in here too.
Yeah. The obligation of the Levites to give a tithe of the tithe. So we'll look at that in just a minute. Okay, so anyway, so the first tithe goes to the Levi, and that's because they should be fed by us. The practice of taking a tenth of our money is from this, but not a requirement from this, meaning it's not this mitzvah. We do it, and it is considered halacha today, and we follow the halacha, and we can figure out the halacha, and the rabbis can tell us if this counts as halacha or not. Like, I'll just give you, for instance, would this count or not? Because you have to separate a tenth, right? So there's a couple in Mexico whose son lives in America. He's interdating. She said she's willing to convert for him. They feel she doesn't really know what that means. They would like to fly them to us for a Shabbos so we could talk to them about what conversion really is. Okay, I said yes. They can come. The couple didn't contact us yet, but they have permission. So now a question could be for the parents, does that flight money come out of their Ma'aser?
Out of their
10%. Out of their 10%. They have to give away.
Right, right. to because
it's a mitzvah. Yeah. Isn't
right, right.
Well,
can you can, you can use some of that? So I don't know the answer. I'm just saying that's the kind of question you could ask. It's not that you just take 10%; you just have to give that to tzedakah. There are certain things that qualify in your maaser money, right? So, like, I think adult education, for instance, counts. Not kids' education. You can't take your yeshiva tuitions out of your maaser money, as far as I know, but I'm not positive. But I think you could take your continuing education money out of your maaser money, because that's not,
obligatory. Not obligated.
Right, right. Whereas with the kid, you are obligated. That's a separate account. But I think you can. And then you can, and depending, and the questions get, you know, stronger as you have less money in your life. So then people would, you could wonder, am I allowed to buy this set of Jewish books out of that money? You know, or things like that. Can I attend this conference out of that money? You know, so that's where, but anyway, that comes from this, but isn't actually this mitzvah. So this is a separate thing. Now, that being said, just throwing it out there just because it's a thought, and she should just know the thought because about kolel, the kolel system. So there are some people who strongly support the kolel system, and some people feel a little frustrated that some people are in learning and it's been multiple generations of not earning incomes, etc. So there are those people who feel that while we do have a lot of people in kolel, and we never had that many people in kolel, the truth is it's still a very small amount. If all of the Levi'im were supposed to be in holy service, if you look at the entire Jewish people, even if a lot of the religious men are in kolel, it's still a tiny percentage of the entire nation. So they feel like that's justified to have so many religious people in kolel, because really, if you look at the entire nation, it's still a very small amount. And we do have to have a 12th of our nation dedicated to holy service.
Do we know, were the tribes the same size?
That's a good question. No, I think we do know, because they had censuses.
Land and censuses.
Well, they had lands, but they had the censuses, but only at that time with the census. So how did it grow? And who was just
So we assume that at the time of the temple, a 12th of the total population were Levites, maybe. I don't.
Right. That's a good question. Yeah.
So I guess if we continue the math, we should say that we should be supporting a 12th of the men in kolel.
But no, a 12th of the population of the Jewish people.
Yeah. Right.
So that's what she says.
Yeah, should be. So let's just say.
But it's only men that are going to go in there.
Yeah, but let's just say, so we have, whatever, 14 million Jews today, right, approximately. So what's a 12th of that, right? So a 12th of that is a million and a half.
Yeah.
Not quite.
A million and a half would be the, so that means half of that is male.
So
right. Three quarters of a million.
750,000.
We for sure have nowhere close to that amount of people learning Torah full time. Even if you just take a half of that, so you just get adults, or a third of that, so you just get adults. 250,000 people in kolel around the world. We don't have that. So
I think where it comes into play, where people get upset, is because actually just in the state of Israel, because they, I mean, the things that I've read is that a certain the population is growing, the religious population is growing so quickly, and they're upset like that if they won't serve in the army or
right, you're right. Yeah. So I'm just throwing this out there as another.
She's just saying as another.
No, yeah. No, for sure that is
the issue. Right,
that
it's way
is
more
the
than
issue.
A 12th, probably.
No, I don't think
the eligible
is.
Men in Israel.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Hard to say so. Yeah,
that seems to be.
They say that 40% of the men are now not going to the army.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I hadn't heard that.
I heard those numbers.
And that's,
but it could
that's
be.
Not
who knows
religious.
Why? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because probably only 40% are Shomer Shabbos in Israel, and of that, most are
going to the army.
Are going into the army. Mm-hmm. You just have a small so.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Anyway, just something to think about. Just I'm throwing that out there that is some one as in support of the kolel learning. Now, in support of the kolel learning, it should be, I think,
men and women.
Well, it should be.
Yeah.
Some people would say it should be men and women learning, and some people I would say that even though this was a tax and it wasn't voluntary, I think that the kolel learners, it should be voluntary to support them, meaning they should be. They should shine in a way that makes me desire to support them, so that their learning is strong
so
enough.
Not entitlement. That,
right.
Just not entitlement to show up.
Right. There shouldn't be entitlement. That should be like, wow, you are so amazing. How could I not support that? You know, I've got to write a check for that. It's just not an option. You know, just the way we feel about some other charities that we see around. Somebody's collecting money to get bulletproof vests for soldiers. It's like, it's not an option. Like, they're serving, they're saving us, they're protecting us. Of course they need a bulletproof. If the Army can't provide it, so I will. You know, but like, it has to be like that, that you just really see the service.
This tithing applies to men and women.
Yes. Everybody who grows
who
anything
grows
has
anything. To grows
anything. Right.
Well, I have such a black thumb.
And you don't have to worry about it.
Give money instead.
Right. Well, it's a different thing. If you're not growing, it's not a mitzvah that applies to you.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, 600...
I'm really good with herbs, though.
That's
good. I do really well.
So 613 mitzvot are not... No one person can keep all 613.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We all do this together. So if you have a black thumb, it's just not yours.
Would Mashiach keep all 613?
No, he can't. Some mitzvahs are just for Kohanim. Some are just for Levim. Some are just for women. Some are just for men. Some are just for judges.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if there's a mitzvah to judge fairly and you're not a judge, it's not your mitzvah.
Right. Could Mashiach be a woman?
It doesn't seem like that's the case.
Probably not.
No. That doesn't seem like that's the case. You guys, I don't know. I wonder if you... I was about to say you would have been proud of me what I answered in Mexico, but you might think I was a sellout, which is what Ephraim said, so I'm curious what you think. So they did interview... Mexico's much more sexist than here. Much, 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 much more.
Mm-hmm.
So I was...
South America.
It's a Latin country,
right?
So you put Orthodox
that,
Judaism...
Coupled with that,
Latin
you're really
together.
In trouble.
So they... So somebody
and then why
me.
Is the mechitza low there?
No, that's Turkish.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's higher in other places. So, but somebody was, the photographer for the conference interviewed me, and he's a Jew, but not that observant. So, and he interviewed me by video, and he wanted to post that on their website. So I had to be very careful what I'm going to say, because it's not just the recording of a class, which I would say
actually
more in, but this is like to be the woman speaker of the conference saying things about women and their roles, right?
So you had to be.
So I chose to be circumspect, so but he asked questions more broadly. How do you feel about women's role in Judaism? Do you feel about it's evolving role, women's evolving roles? They leave the home and they go into leadership positions. Don't you think the Jewish woman's voice should be heard?
Okay, and what did you say?
And should they leave the home and all that stuff? So I said that their primary responsibility is raising children and focusing on their home, building the community in that way. We have a very subtle role, but it's very powerful. We are the undertow. We let the men be the splashy waves, but we drive the waves from underneath. And that the voice of the woman is often heard in the rabbi's voice. If he has a good marriage and he has a good relationship with his wife, that her voice is heard through his as he teaches.
Yeah, I would call that
sellout.
I agree with Ephraim on that one. I totally agree with that.
I would have said
the
real question.
And the reality is
but
you're the way you are by example isn't like that at all.
No.
So, I mean, that is like so totally not who you are. And I appreciate your desire
to be respectful.
To be
respectful.
I was trying to respect the country and keep my job.
Perhaps in the opposite.
Right.
Well, I think it is tricky because what do you do if you are in a community that really doesn't respect women's voices at all.
Right.
And there are plenty of those around.
There are. So, right, you want to... So I sort of felt
how
like...
How do you help those women that are trying to...
So I sort of felt like the movie Lincoln, which we talked about, mm-hmm. how you just have to pass the legislation that gets you a step closer, and you can't necessarily pursue the entire agenda all at once, because then
good
none of it's going
to
go
remember.
Through.
Good thing to keep in mind and hear that.
Right. So,
in other contexts, I would just suggest that all of us bear that in mind.
It's very important.
We're very quick to rush to judgment on all kinds of things because it doesn't accomplish the entire objective.
Right, and we got to go
as
slowly.
Opposed to baby steps.
Right.
And I think with what you said, because you don't get probably the opportunity as much to, well, probably, I don't know, ever, to talk to like a group of men who actually would activate the change, you know,
they wouldn't come to
right, not so often, but right. Little bits and pieces.
Right. I mean, that's really where the change is going to occur. And so the change really starts to occur even less, is like when we're raising sons in the home.
Right.
That's really where the change, right. And it's this generation. I mean, it's just start. Your sons,
in
I'm
all
sure.
In fairness, though, oh. The changes have come in many places from women as well.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think women have totally.
But that's what Tia's saying. It's the women saying, who's educating their sons.
Yeah.
Well, but it hasn't just
no,
been
there's
that.
Been some definitely, no. But I in Mexico, been, no. That's where it's still coming. It's still, it's very, they're definitely yeah. a few decades behind yeah. in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They really are. So it is going to be more of that. And I was able to sprinkle some things around by individual conversations with people. Mm-hmm. So, and who knows? And hopefully it also goes by me teaching the women and they talk to their husbands.
Which is what Tay is.
Yeah, yeah.
And they talk to their husbands. So I can teach the women out loud.
So I don't think you're a sellout.
Thank you.
I don't. Because
I do.
It's got to start somewhere.
It does have to start somewhere.
That was a good answer for that
situation.
For that situation, yeah. I think so.
But I did tell him, and I didn't let him record this, I said, it's really sad that Judaism is so discriminatory against men, because men only have access to half the population's opinions. They only get to hear men speak, whereas women get to hear women and men speak. Mm.
Well, that's interesting.
So we get the broader perspective, yeah. And men also only get to hear half the population singing. We get to hear both. Yeah. So it's really sad for men that they just don't have access to as much information in Torah as women do.
So. Now that sounds good.
Yeah. I should have let him record that.
Yeah.
Sandy feels redeemed.
Anyway, I did also, just by the way, I did say out loud, I mean, I had a few short conversations with people, and then I said it out loud on a tape, that they have to change their opinions towards converts in Mexico. It's ridiculous.
Oh, they're really
awful. Well, they have a really bad...
Ridiculous what's going on. Yeah. I mean, not...
Do they know your background?
Yeah, so...
I'm sure they do.
But I wouldn't be able to... So I'm a female, so I don't have any halachic role. But there is a male convert rabbi in Mexico who's very popular and very successful, really educates a lot of college kids and young professionals. And when they get married, he can't make a bracha under the chuppah. Even though he's the one who brought them to that place and helped them with their shidduch and taught them all. Yeah. Yeah.
Boy,
in the Turkish synagogue, he can. And in the Ashkenazic synagogue, he can. But not in the Syrian ones. So...
We are so bad.
So I said, it's time. It's time to be changed. It's averas that are happening now. It's time for that to be changed. That it's okay to make a takana. Because there was a lot of interdating, so they made a decree, no conversions. You can't marry a convert because you can't interdate and think she's going to then convert. So we're just putting the kibosh on that. Don't bother interdating because you can't convert her, period. I hear the need for that. It should not snowball into we hate converts. We won't give them a bracha. We won't give them an aliyah. We won't take their children into our schools. You know, it's got to...
Oh, that's going to help bring it, yeah.
Right. So I said, now you're transgressing. That much Torah I know. There's two mitzvahs. One is ve'ahavta et ager. That's a positive commandment to love the ger. Mm-hmm. And the other is lo la'anot et ager. Don't torture or bother or frustrate or deal difficultly with the convert. And you're transgressing both. And this is not okay. So get your acts together, Mexico. And the rest of Latin America.
I gotta go. You have to go, really? I'm getting a new computer.
What are you getting? An Apple?
No, I'm not. I decided to do it, but it's a long story. But it's right.
Okay, so we'll just finish because I want to do this mitzvah too. Okay, the obligation of the Levites to give a tithe of the tithe. So, Levites, okay, so we all have to know that there's a special group among us, the Levi'im, who are elevated to some extent and do divine service on our behalf. And Levi'im also have to know there's a special group among them who are elevated and do the divine service, and they have to support them. So that's what this is. The Levites are commanded to separate a tithe from the tithe that they take from the Israelites, that they receive from the Israelites, and that they are to give it to the Kohanim.
Truma of Truma.
As it is stated, moreover, you shall speak to the Levites, then you shall set apart from it a gift for the Lord, a tithe of a tithe. That's what's called everywhere in the Talmud, Truma of Tithe, Trumat Maaser. So that has to be separated out. And given now we discussed with challah, is it a separate mitzvah to separate the tithe and a separate mitzvah to give it? Right, two separate things. Or is it one mitzvah that starts with separating it and ends with giving it?
No.
So the Sefer Chinuch, who goes by the Rambam, holds that it's one mitzvah together. It's just called that, but the Ramban holds that it's two. But nevertheless, we're going by this count, so it's one. The Ramban also holds that not only is it two, but, and I'm not sure if this is a third or if this is part of the two, is that you have to give the nicest from the choicest. You can't give from the dreck. You can't give from... So if you have your whole harvest of apples and there's some yuckier looking ones, that can't be your 10% that you give. And if you, you know, gave whatever you gave to the Levi and maybe they left it out in the sun or whatever, so now there's not such a nice amount there too, they can't give that to the Kohanim. You have to give your nicest stuff. Okay, so that is just to have them in mind, to keep it in their minds that there is something that has to be given. Now the question is, what do you have to separate it from? It's fruits and not vegetables. Vegetables are, would be rabbinic, so rabbinically you're supposed to separate from vegetables too, and we do that today in Israel, you know, cucumbers and tomatoes. But really it's only fruits is biblical. And then there's a question biblically, what is it, all fruits or only certain fruits? Is it just the seven fruits of the land of Israel? Clearly it's all grains. Is it just, is it also oil? Is it also, meaning olive oil, is it also grape juice? So there's all kinds of questions in there, but that would be the straight up halacha. But the actual point of it, let's just read the root reason on 155. So the root reason for the precept, let me begin with the preface. So it's just what we said, past any doubt, the Lord set the entire tribe of Levi apart from the Israelite community for its continual service. However, within the tribe itself, one of them was chosen to be the head, the chief officer, and prince. He and his descendants for all time. He is wholly consecrated within the tribe to stand and minister in the Lord's presence continually, while the rest of the tribe was made subordinate to him to assist in service, as it is written. And the Lord said to Aaron, you and your sons and your father's house with you shall bear the iniquity of the sanctuary, which means you have the task of, you have the responsibility, and you have the gift as well, and that's your job to take care of it. So they are the ones that have to be extra supported, and so the Levi has the job to support them as well. So that's, let's see, we'll finish 159. The precept is in force in every place where Truma and the tithe are in force, which means in the land when the temple's standing. Well, it's enforced today, rabbinically, so you still have to do it. And precept 507, said to Shoftim, we will clarify everything with the Eternal Lord's help. So hopefully next year when we get to mitzvah number 507, we'll get more clarity on this. Okay. So from there we should learn that we should support people who are helping others achieve a relationship with the divine.